If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, if you're looking at flex or industrial, you got to jump when something good comes out because there's 10 other people that are going to jump in front of you.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Cody Payne specializes in selling investment office and industrial buildings in Dallas-Fort Worth. He's been in business for 15 years and runs an 8-person investment sales team. Cody, welcome to the show.
My man, I appreciate it. I was going to ask you, does it look like I'm coming to you from a men's bathroom stall or something from the 80s?
No, man, I love your brick wall. That looks great. Why do you say that?
On my screen, I'm looking at it, it looks like it.
No, not at all. Not at all. I love your brick wall. I can't even tell if it's real or if it's fake. So
that's real.
Oh, good. There you go. Even better. So, I was going to say that's pretty authentic. Man, I'm pumped about getting into this today. You do really an asset class I think everyone wants to talk about and know about. It's something you guys specialize in. Not only do you specialize in a cool asset class, but you specialize in a market that everyone is very well aware of, I think, across all assets. So really, can you give us the same questions I ask everybody who comes on? Can you give us a brief rundown of where you started, where you are now, how you got there, and then, of course, we'll get into what you do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, I started in the commercial real estate side, leasing office and industrial back in the early 2000s, and just kind of grew a team from there and there, and joined up with Colliers International a while back ago, and pretty much me and all my guys, we do the exact same thing. We sell office and industrial buildings, and primarily in Dallas-Fort Worth, I'd probably say 90-95% of our business is out here, and then probably 5-10% is in other parts of Texas. And, we have done a little bit here and there in Oklahoma and whatnot. But, we're prominent out here. We've got a lot of work out here, especially with our economy and the amount of out-of-state people and out-of-country buyers that are looking to do stuff out here. So our work's definitely been cut out for us over the past couple of years.
Right, right. Yeah, you've been in a hot market for a long time. Tell us a little bit, about, I guess, the two different asset classes you guys work in. And, being obviously the office sector, I'd love to see what your thoughts are, nationwide, but also in your market in particular. And then also, we can talk about flex business and flex industrial. Those would be two things I think we'd really be curious about.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we do a lot of office buildings. Historically, we've done quite a few. We've still, even over the past year through the pandemic, we've been selling quite a few office buildings. We just, traded a large tower and a couple office business parks. The office market, I will tell you, obviously is in a unique state right now. I believe it's getting better, especially in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I think we're the number one back to work cities as far as DFW goes throughout the country that has, the amount of people that are actually going back to the office. I know we're fully back here out of our branch here. And so things have been, I feel getting better and better. It still is in a unique state. It still has a stigma to it that a lot of people look at. And, some people are still trying to figure out the future of office space, which I believe at the end of the day, there's always going to be office space. You always have back office, not everybody in the world can work from home. You just can't do it. And so I feel that things are getting better and better there. There are good opportunities out here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area for office, but I think those will probably start to go away. I think that, we'll start to get back on track more and more, which I've seen that we have. And, a couple of recent deals we've traded were, the same prices they would have sold for 2 years ago. And so, we'll just have to kind of see and let things play out. But I feel very, very good about the office space. On the flex industrial side, obviously, everybody, and their mother across the U.S. and everybody knows that, that's one of the more sought after product types. We do a lot in the flex business park stage where it's, smaller tenant base, higher velocity of tenants. Where you have like an industrial business park with, 10, 15, 20 tenants in there. We do a lot of those kind of projects. We like those a lot. We have a lot of developers that we will help buy land. They'll build these, they'll lease them out, and we'll sell them for them. And they're moving at, higher prices than they ever have since I've been in the industry.
Right, right. Let's run back a little bit if we can. When it comes to the office space, what are some opportunities in that? Yeah, in an office space.
You know, I think as far as opportunities, I mean, if I were a buyer and, you know, we're looking at buying something, I really like the, you know, staying out of the direct city, you know, staying out of like a downtown Dallas or downtown Fort Worth. If it were me guiding somebody or doing a syndication of our own, you know, we like the kind of suburb office business parks that kind of stay away from, you know, Fortune 500 companies. We like the local regional tenants and the higher velocity of tenants. You know, not having a tenant that has, you know, more than, you know, 15-20% of the building's occupancy, kind of, you know, skirting a little bit of risk away from, you know, having tenants that have so much space in your buildings. I think that's where the good opportunities are. And, you know, I think some of these, you know, there's, you know, several buildings that I do know out there that have these, you know, large tenants in them that don't need that much space anymore. And, you know, those have and will be coming up for sale. And, you know, I think that's where some good opportunities could come from. And, you know, we're still, you know, picking up quite a few companies and businesses from out of state and expansion out here. And so I think there's good, there's definitely a good future for the office side. It's just kind of knowing where to buy and how to buy and, you know, what your strategy is with any real estate investment.
What, you've used the term a couple of times, I'm not sure I understand it. What's a high velocity tenant?
So like for, take a, one of the flex business parks that we have right now, they've got all their spaces are under 5,000 square feet, right? Mm-hmm. And so if a tenant leaves, there's a lot of tenants out there that are looking for that amount of square footage. So having a long on time market, you know, kind of gets eliminated, with, you know, a project that has a square footage size that tailors to a lot of tenants in the area. Just like a, you know, two bedroom, two bath, you know, apartment out here, you know, does much better than a one bedroom, one bath.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. And then the other thing you talked about was your large tenant spaces. When you have a large tenant, you know, occupying a, let's say an office park, where do you see those getting repurposed, or who's going to be the buyer for those if those things are coming on market?
Well, like say, are you asking like if you have a office building that has one large tenant in there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and that's going to depend. I mean, you know, we're working on one right now that, you know, they've got about 100,000 square feet and they've already said we don't need but 60,000 square feet. So, you know, when their lease is up in a few years, you know, the owner will be getting 40,000 square feet back to release. And, you know, that can, you know, then transition into, if they decide to sell, a, you know, possible, you know, slight discount on selling that asset. And that's something that I think, you know, could be on the lookout over the next year or so, especially as, you know, those leases need time to roll. You know, a lot of these guys, especially, you know, larger companies, you know, these leases are 5, 7, 10 years. And so, you know, some of these won't roll for quite a while, but those are things to kind of look out for. And whenever you do get a big space back, you just then need to kind of do your market research and figure out, all right, what size of tenants are really prominent out in this area. Is everybody under 15,000 feet? And that's where we need to, you know, shuffle these spaces to. And so, you know, that's one thing that always has to be looked at, especially in the office sector.
Right. And you used another phrase there called time to roll. Could you define that for us?
Yeah. So just like, you know, any office lease, like even our office lease here, you know, we've got several years on the lease. And so even if we didn't need the amount of space, we'd still be paying on it.
Sure.
Until that lease expires. And so, you know, there's a lot of buildings, I'm sure out where you're at, you see office buildings that have zero cars out there that may be, you know, like an AT&T call center or something of that nature, that all their people are working from home. Well, a lot of those guys still have plenty of term left on their lease and will pay it out. But when that lease is up, they may not need that much space. But it's also, you know, who knows how that company is transitioning employees and work structure at that time. You know, if they got 3 years or 4 or 5 years left, I mean, things could be 150% back to normal and better at that time. So it's kind of understanding, you know, what is the implications and possibilities of, you know, these office leases.
Did we see large tenants not paying on their office leases in 2020?
Out here, we didn't see many.
Okay. Okay. That's interesting.
Now it's the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Sure. Yeah. And I haven't heard a lot of distress in that, you know, as it pertains to that, but I was really curious since obviously is what you specialize in. Maybe you had some insight on that. What are some options? Let's assume you're a large tenant and we'll just go down this rabbit hole because I mean, I don't know, why not? What are your options as a large tenant and you say, hey, you know what? We've got 5-7 years left on this lease. We've figured out that we can all work from home. Or, you know, like you said, maybe they had 100,000 square feet and they only have 60,000 they need. What are some options for terminating or slowing down those leases or speeding them up, getting out of them early? Like, what does that look like from the tenant side?
Absolutely. So one thing that I have seen from several tenants is something where they basically do a sublease. So they're on the hook for their lease.
Right, sure.
Now, what they've done, and I've seen several of them execute them you know, over the past year, is they'll actually lease their space out to another tenant, usually at a discounted rate to help pay that rent. And so I've seen plenty of them do that. I've seen plenty of subleases come on the market over the past year, and I'm sure we'll, you know, probably continue to see several more. And that's, you know, an option for a tenant who's on the hook for a long-term lease, and to kind of get a little bit of relief is to work on subleasing it out to another company. And, you know, I've seen in many cases, those companies end up taking over that lease.
Oh, now that's interesting. I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought that if you are subleasing and you've got, you know, your whoever your, you know, lease, whoever has the master, master lease isn't the right word, but whoever has the original lease on that,
yeah,
you would be getting a discounted rate, I would think, over maybe what the person who holds the original lease would have. Is that not the case?
Well, and yeah. And so we actually had a sublease space here before we moved into this space. And so our rate was slightly discounted to the people that we were actually subleasing from.
Sure.
And then when their lease was up, we had the option of, you know, renewing and staying there or moving. And so, but that's what I've seen a lot of companies do is put their spaces out for sublease and, you know, offer a several dollar per square foot discounted rate for somebody to come in and you know, rent office space from there. And I mean, you got to keep in mind, I mean, it's expensive to move offices. And so, you know, I've seen it many times where, you know, when that lease is up, those people end up staying anyways.
Mm, right. Because then they're going to take over either at the original lease rate and or higher, but it still makes sense. In essence, they got a, you know, a discounted rate for X number of years until they had to pay up anyway. So that was, so they were making money in the bank either way.
Yeah. And we don't want to move again here. I can tell you that. No. Moving's not fun. IT, phones, infrastructure, furniture. It's not, you know, office is one of the more expensive moves.
Oh, for sure. That's for sure. Let's talk about Flex Industrial. Excited to hear kind of where you see that going in your market. Obviously you guys are at a crossroads in America. Like a lot of goods and services flow right through Dallas-Fort Worth. So yeah. Really curious, let's say I wanted to get involved in Flex Industrial. Where do I start educating myself? What's an ideal, like, you know, what's, and I think maybe you talked about this already, but like, what's an ideal acquisition size? I mean, is this like you talked about the velocity of tenants? Is that something that we should really be looking for more than larger, you know, 500,000 square foot where I'm not making up numbers. I don't even know.
Yeah, no, I like your numbers. No, I mean, look, if you're kind of new and you're trying to invest in, you know, kind of Flex Industrial out here, I would unquestionably say to do a small tenant base, you know, keeping these square footage 2 to 5,000 square feet, you know, getting something that's heavy multi-tenanted. You know, a lot of ours will start around $2.5 million and will work their way up, you know, easily to 25, 30 million. But I would say starting on the Flex small bay business parks where your tenant sizes are 2,500 to 5,000 square feet. This way, if you have a vacancy, your time on market, you know, is much shorter. The TIs, the commissions, all that is really in your favor compared to some of the larger sites and office buildings. But, you know, it's then, you know, once you kind of know what you're looking for, it's then finding the right areas, you know. Some of the great areas out here, I'd say, are North Fort Worth, South Fort Worth, you know, areas, you know, kind of surrounding, you know, Frisco, Prosper. You're not going to find much good stuff in Frisco and Plano. It's all going to be very, very high priced. But, you know, McKinney, there's a lot of good surrounding areas. Argyle, I mean, I can, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, people don't realize, is made up of a lot of sub-cities, a lot of cities. You know, it's not like Houston where it's just, boom, Houston.
Right.
It's, you know, Dallas-Fort Worth, Hearst, Arlington, you know, Euless, all these, Irving. And so there's a lot of towns out here that a lot of people have never heard of or don't even know exist, but are, you know, doing phenomenally economy-wise and business-wise. And so there's still good deals to be had on the Flex side. You know, I will tell you prices are higher than they've probably ever been, but, you know, rents keep pushing on that end. And we've got several developers that are building these and they're actually leasing them before the construction's even done. And so, I mean, it just kind of shows you where the demand is.
Do you have any idea, like, let's say somebody wanted to build and then just own it from that point forward? I mean, you know, if you got builders that are building them, but they're selling them off, right? Or are they building and holding?
We've got some that are building and holding. We've got several that will, you know, we'll sell them land and they'll build a, you know, metal multi-tenant flex complex and lease it up, and then we'll turn around and sell it for them.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That's interesting.
And if you were going to ask about, you know, build cost or anything of that nature for some of these, the flex side, you only got guys that are building these metal parks and they're all in anywhere from, you know, $70, $75 per square foot on the build side. Last few that we sold were around $120, $125, $115 a foot. So, I mean, there's a good spread in there for, you know, these guys that are building them. And, you know, the greatest thing about them is, you know, when they build them and lease them, I mean, we've got a list, you know, we've got a DMV line out the door that is, you know, trying to buy these things. And there's no shortage of buyers for these products.
When you say DMV line, what's that mean?
The DMV line in Texas is very long.
What
you to mean? Go get your driver's license renewed.
Okay, so I'm sorry.
It was a joke. So like if you go to the DMV out here, it's a mile long to get through there.
I gotcha. You're using that in comparison to the number of buyers that you have in line.
Correct.
It's a DMV line of buyers. I gotcha.
That's right.
Sorry, man. I'm on the
bad joke.
Yeah, I'm on the slow this morning. No, that makes sense. That's fantastic. And that's a heck of a spread for a builder. I mean, that's great.
Well, we've done metal up to 180 a foot, you know, it just really depends on tenants, leases, you know, net operating income and, you know, things of that nature. But as far as the metal business parks go, a lot of ours are going to range anywhere from, you know, 80 to 125 a foot. And that's, you know, all walks of ages and things of that nature. And then when you start getting into the tilt wall, you know, concrete ones, those can go up substantially higher than that. But their build cost is so.
Right. Sure. Sure. What have you seen labor and materials prices? I know we're in construction on a boat and RV storage right now. And
oh, nice.
Yeah. Materials prices have just, you know, they're not eating us alive. We have actually still a really robust project, but they certainly have skyrocketed in the last 8 to 10 months. So have you seen a commensurate rise in your metal building prices as, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we actually are also, we built a boat and RV storage facility as well out here in a town called Weatherford. And I've seen over 12 months, the metal prices increase quite a bit just on that. And, you know, all ours are out there is covered awnings,
right?
You know, but we're getting them done out there. I don't know what you're seeing on prices where you're at, but out here in Texas, I mean, we're getting covered awnings around $650 per square foot built in everything, which is, I think, pretty good.
Yeah, we're not quite there. It's actually probably, yeah, I'd have to go back to the spreadsheet and look. I don't think it's quite that nice, but that's really interesting. That's fascinating. What else should we know as we kind of survey not only your market, but I guess these assets in particular? What are some things maybe I haven't asked that you'd say, hey, these are good things that you should be considering?
I think it is also like with any investment, it's, you know, risk versus reward. And, you know, we do plenty of single tenant net lease industrial as well. You know, your risk there is if the tenant leaves, you now have a fully vacant building. But, you know, your reward for a lot of these, like, you know, the last one we did was a single tenant triple net lease deal where the tenant basically takes care of landscaping, taxes, insurance, everything. And you just get, you know, one rent check in the mailbox, you know, every month. And there's no headache, no hurdle, no hassle to it, you know, pretty much zero management. But like I said, your risk is when they leave, you know, you now have a fully vacant building. And so those returns are generally a little lower than, say, a heavier multi-tenant project, just because the lower management of it. I prefer the higher return. I don't mind the extra work. And I think a lot of owners and investors kind of agree with that. And especially if you get a good management company, there's great management companies out here in DFW that can, you know, take these things and help increase rents, help retain tenants, help keep everybody happy, keep things churning and moving well. And so that's one thing that I always, you know, tell people is, you know, if you're looking to invest, because we get out of state investors every day that are calling us. And that's really the main question is, you know, what kind of return are you looking for? How much work are you looking to put into it? And, you know, if you're looking at flex or industrial, you got to jump when something good comes out because there's 10 other people that are going to jump in front of you.
That's interesting that you say returns are lower in a single tenant triple net lease building. I would expect them to be lower because of the triple net side and your management headaches are not there, but also your risk is higher in the potential for vacancy. So they move out and suddenly you've got this space that's probably larger that you're now looking to refill. So I would think that you know, those two maybe aren't equal, and that you would get a better return on that front because of the risk versus the multi-tenant situation. Obviously more work.
Yeah.
But yet in my book, that would be lower risk because, you know, then you're not looking to fill, you know, one space with, you know, one large tenant. You've got all these, you know, like you said, DMV line of, you know, potential tenants. So I would think that your returns there would be lower, but you're telling me it's the other way around.
Well, and I agree with you. I mean, I prefer multi-tenant way over single tenant.
Yeah.
Me personally, you know, and it's just like, if you go buy a single tenant, at least Chick-fil-A or McDonald's, you know, those are like still, I think, in the high threes on the cap rate. You know, I think Dollar Generals are, you know, still hovering in the high fives, low sixes, but you know, they do give you good long-term leases.
Yeah.
And you know, those are good tenants that, you know, a lot of times you can bank on and trust, and, you know, but you know, some people don't want to have the hassle of, you know, having to deal with 10 or 15 tenants, or, you know, having a, you know, rent roll that's consistently rolling and dealing with renewals and things of that nature. But it just comes down to preference and, you know, what you're looking to get out of the project. But I always prefer heavier multi-tenant, always.
Right, right. Not only do you prefer it, but it all sounds like you, there's still, you know, more money to be made in that environment than there is in the single tenant.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
That's great. Hey, that's a win-win. We don't get many of those. Hey, Cody, let's jump here in the final four, if we can. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Be patient. Be patient. I see a lot of people jump in with you know, everything, feet, face first, whatever you want to call it. And I've seen plenty of mistakes, you know, out here from out-of-state investors. And, you know, be patient, align yourself with, you know, the right people that specialize in that type of product. You know, there's generalists all over the place out here, as I'm sure there are kind of where you're at, people that will sell a piece of land here, sell a retail center, do a lease here, and they're just not really specialists. And, you know, me and my guys, that's what we pride ourselves in. We don't do anything but office and industrial. You know, we got a good group here that sells self-storage facilities. That's all they do. We got, you know, good retail guys. That's all they do. And so aligning yourself with a specialist and being patient and doing your research is going to save you a lot of headache and money. I can assure you that.
I like that. I like that. What is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
We are coming in every day. We are. I'm telling you, there's a lot of firms out here. There's a lot of agents. They're not working. Mm-hmm. You know, we picked up business. There's several larger groups that we've picked business up from over the past several months that have never worked with us or me in 15 plus years.
Oh, wow.
And because their agents were not active or just not giving them, you know, the right guidance or whatever the case may be, they said, hey, you know what, Cody, we're going to give you and your guys a shot because we don't like what we're seeing and hearing from our guys. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're staying active. We're staying educated. We're staying on top of everything, you know, just being as active as possible, I think is the key to victory. Anytime you have a, you know, an economy like this, just like, you know, in the 2008, 2009, 2010 downturn, I worked harder than ever. And I feel like I came out better than ever because of that.
Right. No, that's key. That's key. When it comes to giving back, what is one thing you are doing to make the world a better place?
I have, I'm a big muscle car guy, right? I like muscle cars from the 70s. I have quite a few.
Oh, fun.
I haven't been driving them as much often to kind of help the environment.
Man, that's too bad. I mean, it's good and it's bad. They're beautiful cars.
Yeah. But, you know, no, we're a good group here. We're actually working on, and we don't have it yet, but we're working on a charity for our team here that we will actually give a portion of every sale to. We're still going through that. Hopefully we'll announce that here pretty soon. We're still trying to figure that one out, but we're going to do that.
Oh, that's
something we're doing this year.
That's super cool. Good for you. Cody, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Very easy. We're the easiest people to get a hold of. You know, you can go to texasofficeinvestments.com. You know, you can find Cody Payne or me or any of my guys on LinkedIn. You know, Colliers International is you know, who we work for. And, you know, we're based out of Dallas-Fort Worth. But you know, you can just Google that and it'll come up with anything and everything under the sun, but it'll all be ours.
That's awesome. Cody, thank you so much for your time today. Certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, my man, I appreciate you.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, That would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.